Okay, good evening. First of all, thank you all for coming. It's very hot, it's the summer, and it's not so easy to come out for a shiur at this time, so I very much appreciate that you came, and I want to thank Leora for inviting me once again. I guess that means that last year's shiur wasn't that bad, or that you're giving me another chance to make amends, however this works. Generally, I try to have source sheets when I speak. Today is just like a totally crazy day for me, so you'll have to forgive me if I don't have source sheets. If you happen to have a Megillas Eicha, you could follow along. If you happen to know a Baal Peh, so that will help also. But the fact is, what I'd like to talk about with you tonight is what I consider to be the major theme in the first perek of Eicha, and we'll try to connect it to two mitzvahs in terms of the mitzvah of Nichum Aveilim, of comforting mourners, and also the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, and hopefully we'll be able to do all of this in less than an hour. So let's begin. You know, Nechama Leibowitz, the Bernal of Racha, had an approach to studying of Tanakh, which is that when you have words that repeat many times in a certain segment, so that teaches me that this is very important, and that's a theme for the segment. And when you read the first parak of Eicha, you notice that there are certain words that repeat again and again and again. And even when those words don't repeat, the idea that those words represent keeps on repeating. And because you don't have an Eicha in front of you, I can't test all of you to ask you what this is. But the basic idea is that there are words of Ein Lo Menachem, that there's no comfort, there's no consoling for Yerushalayim. You see this already in Perek Aleph Pasuk Beit. Bochol Sivka Balayla, you cry at night, V'dimasa Alechya, the tears are always on the cheek. Ein lo menachem mikol ohaveha, even her loved ones aren't able to comfort her. We also have a similar idea in Pasuk Gimel. Pasuk Gimel speaks about Lo Matzah Manoach. That Klaus are Yashab Agayim Lo Matzah Manoach. The word Manoach and Menachem are very similar, and we'll try to talk about that a bit. We also see this in Pasuk Zayin. Pasuk Zayin speaks about Bin Po Amo Biyadzar Ve'ein Ozerla, that when the nation fell to the enemy and no one helped out, Ra'u HaTzarim, the oppressor saw it, and Sahakal Mishpatay left. The fact that no one is helping is very similar to the idea of no one comforting. Right? So the parak keeps on repeating these ideas that we're not being comforted. And then in Pasuk Tes is very clear. Tumasa B'Shulecha Lo Zachar Acharisa, that the Tumah was very noticeable. Vaterplaim, they went down rapidly. Ein Menachem La, the same repetition. Ein Menachem La, there's no one to comfort Yerushalayim. There's no one to comfort Klal Yisrael. So far that's four, but we have a few more, and I'm probably missing a couple also. But Pasuk Tes Zayin speaks about Ki Rachak Mimeni Menachem Meshev Nafshi. I don't have a consoler who's nearby. It's very far away, whatever consolation I'd have. Pasuk Yud Zayin, Perasat Zion Biyodeha, Ein Menachem La. Again, there's no comfort. And Pasuk Chaf Aleph, at the very end of the Perek, we have Shamu Kina Nocha Ani, Ein Menachem Li. Here I'm so Nenoch, I'm so sad, and I'm so destroyed, and there's no one to comfort me. So I want to focus with you on a little bit is, what is so bad about not having comforters? I mean, presumably, the real problem with Eicha, the real problem with Korban HaBayis, is that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. And that itself is a pretty big problem. What does not having comforters indicate? What is the lesson of not having comforters? And I should point out that this lesson really comes across in the first pasuk in Eicha. Eicha yashva vodod. How she sat. Vodod means alone. Right? Being alone apparently is part of the problem. And the Mekonen in the first parak of Eicha is bringing out an idea that we are alone. And the question is, what's so bad about being alone? What's so bad about not having comforters? Why is this such a problem? That's the question that I want to focus on to begin with. Does anyone want to have a suggestion? Maybe you'll say something better than I plan on saying.
Sorry, I don't have a suggestion for an answer, but just to kind of compliment it, that, like, we do, the idea of, you know, not being alone in the morning, we do that, like, in a Shiva house, you say, Hamakum Menachem Chaim, Sof Shaar V'Leit Tzion Yerushalayim, and you do that, you tie the comfort of, you say that the mourner should be comforted by the fact that they're not alone in the mourning, because we're all essentially mourning.
Excellent.
So I think that, that's
right.
Connected.
So I actually want to focus on that. In a few minutes, I want to use Nicham Avelim as the paradigm for the point that we're getting to. But you're right. The way we are Menachem Avelim, we tell you that you're not alone. That there's a community here for you. There is Imo Anochi B'Tzara. Michakadosh Baruch Hu is with you always. That's Hamokom Menachem Eslem. Hamokom refers to God, right? God is everywhere. So that's obviously 100% correct, and that's the point that we're trying to get to, but I just want to get there in a few minutes, so you got to give me a little bit of time. I said that you would probably say something better than me, getting there a lot quicker, but you know, sometimes you have to give a shiur, so you have to, you know, extend things. Now, being alone, Eicha Yashua Badod, being alone is a very bad thing, correct? That's the beginning of Eicha. Yet the Gemara in Sanhedrin on Daf Kuf Dalet, by the way, is a very good Daf to learn on Tisha B'Av. It goes through all the Psukim at the beginning of Eicha. Actually, I shouldn't say all the Psukim, it like jumps around a lot, but it gives drushes on each of, or on many of the Psukim, and it really brings Eicha tight. And the Gemara speaks about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rabbi Yochanan says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to the Jewish people, I wanted you to be alone. The Pasuk says, Vayishkon Yisrael Bodod Ein Yaakov, that Klal Yisrael was alone. And we sinned, Zakhtu Gemara, and therefore Hashem says that we have to be alone. Therefore, Eicha Yashua Bodod. And this is one of those Gemaras that you read and you kind of scratch your head and like, what the heck? No, I wanted you to be alone, so now you sin, now you're alone. Like, that doesn't really work. But apparently the idea is that there's two different types of being alone. Vayishkon Yisrael Betach Bodod in Yaakov, Zakhlai Yisrael is alone with a sense of security. The mashal that the Gemara gives elsewhere is it's like the lion. A lion, or actually a lavi, which is a lioness is alone, because it doesn't need anybody. You could be alone because you're completely confident in who you are, and you're completely confident that I'm independent. I don't need anybody. And that's the type of aloneness that reflects a sense of strength. But then there's a type of aloneness of Eicha Yashua Bodod that comes from a complete sense of weakness to the point of almost despair. That's Eicha Yashua Bodod. Rav Soloveitchik, in one of his Shiurim, he pointed out that he felt that there's a difference between being alone and being lonely. And the way the Rav said it, which I think is pretty obvious, is this same type of idea, that I could be alone in the sense of, I just don't need people. I'm cool. You don't deserve me. I'm too good for that. Right? That type of being alone, that's tremendous strength. It might be arrogant also, but it reflects a certain degree of strength. And that's wonderful. And that's someone, though, who's alone, but who realizes that if he or she wants to go anywhere, there's a place for them, no? The lion, who's alone, knows that, okay, I'm very confident in who I am on the top of my mountain, and I don't need you, but I'm also very confident that should I ever be interested in, like, striking up a conversation, so I have a place where I could go. That's when you're alone. When you're lonely, the difference is that you feel that you feel that, you know what, there's really no place where I could go. You feel like no one understands me. No one appreciates what I'm going through. It's not worth communicating my feelings to anybody because no one's going to get it. And that feeling of being lonely, that feeling of despair, that's the feeling that Churban Habayis engendered. So the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch, Rabbi Yochanan says, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I wanted Klal Yisrael to be Vayishkon Yisrael Badad. I wanted them to be alone. But in terms of the way that they're alone, because we sinned, so then it became Eicha Yashar Badad. Then it became the type of loneliness, which is really a sense of isolation. It's not a sense of solitude. It's a sense of isolation. And that's really two different feelings. Now, an avel, a mourner, I forgot your name in the back, I'm sorry. My new comic. What?
Leia.
Hi, Leia. Thank you. Thank you for telling me your name again. But when a person, Rahman Latzlam, is in avelus, so the person always feels that you can't possibly understand what I'm going through. And the avel is there. And the avel feels like, I don't really want to even talk. I don't want to even get involved in people. I just want to be on my own. And that's the type of feeling that Chazal say is not a positive feeling. And that's why there's a mitzvah of Nichum Avelim. No? Now, Nichum Avelim is one of the hardest mitzvahs to do properly. I know this for two reasons. One is that there's a YouTube clip about stupid things that people say at shivas, which is really very stupid. But unfortunately, many people are yotzei stupidity with all the hidurim. It's unbelievable. But people will come in, like, you can watch this YouTube clip, and people come in and they say, oh, you know, your father died, Taka. He must have done some really big averus, you know, to die at a young age. That's very stupid, no? You shouldn't say that. Right? Now, again, you would say, like, obviously it's a YouTube clip, and, like, it happens in real life. There are people who come in and say the dumbest things, and instead of comforting the avel, they make the avel want to punch them really hard. That's not the mitzvah, trust me. You also know this because the Gemara, in a number of places, the Gemara speaks about the way various Amoraim went to do Nichum and the things that they said, and the Gemara is critical of the things that various Amoraim said. The Gemara says that Ula went to Bavel, went to Menachem Avel, and at first he said, I shouldn't go to Bavel because the Bavloim don't know anything about Nichum Avelim. All they say is, like, what could we do? What could we do? And Ula felt that's like Fira, because if I'm saying, what could we do, that means that I would try to do something, but it's all B'yad Hashem, and I can't really do anything anyway, so, like, what am I trying to accomplish? And then the Gemara said that Ula came, and he went to be Menachem Avel, and he spoke about how HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Al Tatzar Es Moav, Al Tizkor B'Mochama, that you shouldn't start a war against Moav, because they're going to be the Shtei Predos Tovos, two wonderful birds that will come out of Moav, Naama HaAmonis, and Rosa Moavia, Amon HaMoav, same thing. No, whatever, good enough. But because these two wonderful birds that will come out, so therefore we shouldn't oppress Moav. And Ula said, oh, and that's the proper Nichum Avelim. Proper Nichum Avelim is that, you know, your son who died, had beautiful birds been able to come out of him, he wouldn't have died so young, so obviously he died because there'd be nothing good that would ever come out of him. And that, the Gemara sort of leaves as like a cliffhanger, and many of the Mefarshim of the Gemara, the Maharshal comments, he says, whoa, you know, the whole Gemara is backwards. And what the Gemara is really saying is that Ula felt that no one was being Menachem Avel properly, but it turned out that his way of being Menachem Avel was really what was improper. Many times people feel that, like, I'm going to be the one, I'll show up at a Shiva house, and I'm going to say something really smart, something that the Avel will really connect to, and what happens is that you don't say anything smart. In fact, you get the Avil even more upset. And that's the idea that the Maharshal says is what emerges from that Gemara with Ula. Now, we see this in real life, that people try to be Menachem Avil, and effectively, they're not successful. And there's really a machlokes lahalacha about what's the proper way of being Menachem Avil. Let me just give a little bit of background. The Gemara says that it's usur to speak as a Menachem. I can't comfort the Avil ad sheyiftach piv, until the Avil begins to say something. No? And that's a very difficult halacha, because I remember one time Rabbi Meir Torsky was sitting Shiva, and Rabbi Meir Torsky generally doesn't speak at all to anybody. And he's saying Shiva, like, people just come in and not saying anything. And the question is, what's going on here? Is that proper Nicham Avayon? Like, no, you're not saying anything. You're not allowed to talk until the Avil speaks. Now, most of us are very make on this, and we're make on this halacha because we assume that in 5 Akon, right, in his Sefer Badei HaShulchan Hachas Avelos, that maybe it's because we assume that all the Avil has to do is speak one time during Shiva to anybody. And once Avil starts speaking, that's like the heter for anybody. The Levush writes that the reason you're not supposed to speak until the Avil begins to talk is because maybe the Avil is in such a state that he doesn't want Nichum at all. And that could be for one of two reasons. The Levush has a funny suggestion that maybe the person is happy that the relative died. Unfortunately, there are abusive relationships in the world where these things happen. The other suggestion is that the person just isn't in a mental state to receive Nichum. But the fact is, you know, paying a Shiva visit is very interesting because Me'ikar Hadin, it seems, and that's what the Prisha writes, you see from this Gemara that there is a mitzvah Nichum Avelam, it's clear. But the Prisha says that you see from the Gemara that I can't say anything until you talk. That means I fulfill my mitzvah Nichum Avelam by being present and not saying anything. You don't need to utter a single word, and that's a fulfillment of Nichum Avelam. The Chofetz Chaim in his Sefer Ahavas Chesed, Chofetz Chaim disagrees, no? Chofetz Chaim writes that he thinks that you have to say something for Nichum Avelam, but to make sure people don't say the stupid things. So therefore, we tell you, this is the formula what to say. The formula is that you should be consoled. And because everyone is saying the same thing, we're trying to avoid people saying the stupid things. That's the basic idea. Now, part of this idea, both according to the Prisha, who says that Nichum is really just being there, and according to the Chafetz Chaim, that Nichum involves saying this formula. The idea is that Nichum simply means that I'm here for you if you want it. Nichum Avelam does not involve saying anything really great. And what Nichum Avelam, I think, therefore means is that we're trying to break you away from your sense of being lonely, desperate, completely isolated, to a sense of that you're just alone, but recognize that there is a community there for you. Nichum Avelam has both a communal aspect and an individual aspect. There's a communal aspect that we do in Nichum Avelam that's called a Shura, which we do at the Beis HaKfaris. You only do this if you have a minion present, and you line up. The minion is, you line up on two sides, and the Avelam walk between, and you say, I'm okay, Nachem. We try to replicate that with the Nichum Avelam and Shul before Shabbos begins, that it's a degree of communal Nechama. And that shows that we as a community are able to offer consolation. It's interesting that Mahalacha, there might be a slight difference. We never see the Isser for a community to be Menachem before the Avil speaks, no? The Isser to say something to the Avil before the Avil speaks is only for the individual. For the community, we don't see that at all. There are many degrees to this. But the fact is that I think the lesson of Nichum Avelam in general is the lesson that, you know what, you're not really isolated. You might now feel like no one understands you, but recognize that there's a community here, recognize that we as individuals are here for you, recognize that we're trying to break you out of this loneliness and make you into someone who feels that there's a community for you. So, I think the lesson of the first parak of Eicha, we're actually doing Eicha now, not Hilchos Avelos, but the lesson of the first parak of Eicha in some ways is that Ein La Menachem is really the worst type of thing. You see, if you're totally alone, and you're totally lonely, I should say, and you can't break out of that, there's no one there at all, so then you'll continue to wallow in your sorrow, and there won't be any escape from it. And after Churban HaBayis, so Megillas Eicha speaks about how Klal Yisrael was badad, we were alone, and we were alone in the sense of we used to be very social. Ha'ir Rabosiyam. We used to be, Yerushalayim is a city that was teeming with people, but now it's Ka'almana. Rabosi Bagoyim, Sarasi Bamdinos. We used to be the leaders. We used to be totally involved. And now look what we are. Ein lo menachem mikol ohaveha. Even the friends, even the people who love us, can't offer any consolation. The sense of loneliness totally overcomes. The friends that we used to have, those friends are rebelling, and they actually become enemies. So the lesson of being alone is a lesson that it helps you, or not being alone is what breaks you out of avelos. That's the mitzvah of nichum avelos. I think this part is obvious. But I want to just focus on another angle, which comes across from the halacha, that I think is the flip side of the coin, but it's more interesting. The halacha is that an avel can't be an avel without the chama. And an avel can't, in both senses, you can't be an avel and you can't get out of avelos without nechama. They're both connected. Let me explain what I mean. The Gemara speaks about someone who nishtagadach dies and doesn't have any relatives. So what do you do for the shiva? Unfortunately, this actually comes up somewhat often in this community, no? That someone is nifter and, like, there's no relative to sit shiva, there's no relative at all. So what do you do in these situations? So the Gemara speaks about how 10 people should come, or the Rambam. The Gemara doesn't exactly say that, but the Rambam says that 10 people should come, they should sit in this place for the full week of shiva, and then other people should come and be menachem those 10 people. Which is very funny, no? Like, no one's an avel here. Like, when the Lubavitcher Rebbe died, you know, the Rebbe had no children, no? Rebbe had no living relatives when he died, so they had 10 chassidim who they designated to sit shiva, and other people came and they were menachem. There was a big Talmud Chacham here in town a few years ago, Rabbi Yosef Lenevsky. I don't know if any of you remember him. He was like the blind rabbi, huge Talmud Chacham. Like, he had a degenerative eye condition and his eyesight was weakening, and he used to use his last drops of vision to read some svarim of Rabbi Yosef Engel, who was like a Pleilosh Gadol. He said, like, when I'll be blind, people might read me Gemara, but no one's going to read Rabbi Yosef Engel to me anymore. Very colorful character, had the best stories. He was really, he used to hang around in the YU library. When Rabbi Wernevsky was nifter, so there was no relatives. So we couldn't do the Rambam, like, we didn't have 10 people. Well, I'm sure I had 10 people who volunteered to sit shiva for a full week. But So people came and they sat some sort of shiva after davening, and then other people came to be menachem. And Rav Soloveitchik asked about this din. He said, like, what's the pshat in this rabbah? How come other people have to come and be menachem? So the Rav said that he felt that you can't be an avel without nichum. The fact that the Rambam tells me that you need people to come and comfort you means that your mourning is incomplete so long as there's no nechama. You see, what nechama does, what nechama avelim does, is it puts things into perspective. Avelis is terrible. Avelis is a huge tragedy. But we also recognize that there's a galgal hachozer ba'olam, that there's a cycle. It's all circular. That's why the Siddur Havra, the first meal that you give to an Ovel, you give round things, no? One of my friends told me that the first Shaila he got was on the Chol HaMoed, Pesach. Someone called up and asked, like, what do you do for a Siddur Havra? He says, oh, you give bagels. That's the wrong answer, Chol HaMoed, Pesach. Totally the wrong answer. You give something that is round, but you don't give bagels on Pesach. Usually you give eggs or lentils or something, the same type of food that we eat at Suda HaMafsekes. This year there's no Suda HaMafsekes. Before Tisha B'Av, it's on the Shabbos. By the year, and you have a Suda Mafsekes, you eat like those round things to show that there's a Galgal HaChozer Ba'olam, that things rotate, things are circular. In other words, Nichum Avelim is there to put things into perspective. And if you can't put things into perspective, if you're totally mired in grief, so there's something lacking in your Avelis. Avelis is supposed to be something that moves a person to do tshuva. If you're just mired in grief, you're not going to move in the direction of tshuva. And that's why avelis without a nichum, and even when we fake avelis, even when we have the 10 people coming and sitting shiva, fake shiva, for the nifter who had no relatives, you need menachamim. And avelis ends, we paskin, you know, you sit shiva, but we don't really sit shiva, no? You get up the morning of day 7. But when do you get up? You get up when the menachamim leave. No? In other words, there's a real connection that you need nichum to properly fulfill avelos. And without nichum, the avelos is lacking. So I think some of the idea of the beginning of Eicha is that we're emphasizing time and time again that, you know what? There's no nichum. And because there's no nichum, it's almost like Yaakov Avinu, that Vayisabel v'no yomim rabim, that Yaakov Avinu couldn't get over the death of Yosef because Yosef wasn't dead. Right? The idea is that when you're completely mired in grief, that's also not avelos. Or it's not proper avelos. Now, we should feel that way on Tisha B'Av, but the sense of feeling that there's no menachamim is also wrong, because the end of Megillas Eicha is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is menachem us, and when we read the Haftorahs of the Shiva Denechemta, Anochi Anochi Hu Menachemchem, no? One of the Haftorahs that we read from Yeshayahu is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is menachem. So the idea is to move away from this place where we feel that, or you feel that there's no possibility for nechama. So that's the first point that I wanted to make, the connection between being alone and being lonely, and nichum, and how that fits in with the first parak of Eicha. It happens just if you read Eicha very quickly, just the themes of Eicha. The first parak is all about being alone. The second parak is very angry. Yeah? This isn't my Chiddush, that the second parak is angry. The pasuk says, "Eicha Ya'iv Be'apel Hashem." How HaKadosh Baruch Hu clouds up with his anger. V'lo zocher hadom raglov v'yom apo. When God is angry. And the parak Beis of Eicha ends also with God's anger. V'lo ha'at tikra chiyom mo'ed megurayim yisaviv. V'lo ha'ya v'yom af Hashem polet v'sarid. When God is angry. In other words, Eicha in some ways is a progression that seems to be getting worse, but it's really getting better. And let me explain what I mean. It seems to be getting worse because Perek Aleph of Eicha, HaKadosh Baruch Hu isn't angry. Perek Aleph of Eicha, though, you're alone. And when you're in a relationship and you're fighting with somebody and you're angry and they're screaming at you, in some ways that's better than just getting the cold shoulder. You know, I don't know if you've ever had a relationship with somebody and the person just didn't tell you what's bothering them. And the person is just like turning away and not saying anything. We have a term for that in halacha and chumash called hester panim. That's a very, very scary thing. When you don't recognize that God is there at all, that's very scary. That's ein l'menachem. Because the real nichum comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu being present. God's anger feels awful when you are getting, when the boss is screaming at you. I don't know if you've had this experience, I've had it. You know, when the boss says, close the door, you're out. It's gone. It's like the worst feeling in the world, no? And when you get screamed at, it feels really bad. But in some ways, that means that we have a relationship. Because if the boss would really think that you're doing a lousy job, they would just ignore you and then, like, fire you, no? The fact that they scream at you means that they want you to improve. So the anger that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has in Perek Beis of Eicha, although it feels much worse than Perek Aleph, it's Perek Beis is a much angrier Perek. But in some ways it's moving in the direction toward Nechama because of the awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. So that's the end of my shtickle about anger, and then I have one more. Any questions about this point so far? Alright, I made a few points. Okay. We can talk about something else. Ha'ir Rabosi Haisa Ka'amana, that Eicha begins, that the city that used to be full, used to be teeming with people, now Haisa Ka'amana now became like a widow that is all alone. And Rashi and Eicha comments, based on also Gemara and Sanhedrin Daf Kuf Dalet, where all these Gemaras are, Rashi comments, now Haisa Ke'amana, it's like an Amana, but it's not an Amana itself. In other words, what Rashi is saying is that there's a difference between being a genuine Amana, a widow, that the husband is dead and the husband is never returning, and being Ke'amana, being like an Amana, which is, you know what, my husband went away, I don't know when he's going to return. It's pretty scary and frightening, but there's a chance that he's going to return, and the end result is that he in fact does return. So being a live almana, in some ways, is worse than being a full-fledged almana, because the anxiety, the tension of not knowing when your beloved will come back is insurmountable. But at the same time, there's a certain degree of hope. On the other hand, the full-fledged almana, that you might not have that same anxiety, but you are at Balavaya. You know, he's not coming back. So Rashi tells us right at the beginning of Eicha that you should know that Haisa Ke'almana, that what we have over here is a temporary situation of Korban Habayis, and the loving relationship between the Kaddish Baruch and the Jewish people. By the way, I think I pointed out last year when we spoke that the Sefer and Tanakh that's most similar to Eicha in the imagery is Shir HaShirim, no? Shir HaShirim and Eicha are both love stories, but one is like a love story that's gone right, one is a love story that's gone wrong. And Shir HaShirim is kind of bumpy, but the fact is they're very similar. And Eicha is about Haisa Ke'almana. It's about this temporary state of being away from the Ribono Shel Olam. The pasuk says, we spoke about Ein La Menachem in the first shtickel that we gave, and we also mentioned right at the beginning that Lo Mutz Amanoach is a similar type of thing. That's in Pasuk Gimel, no? Golsa Yehuda Me'oni Me'rov Avodah. This Pasuk is actually hard to translate. Golsa Yehuda Me'oni Me'rov Avodah, that Yehuda went into Golos because of poverty. That's a simple reading of the pasuk, no? That doesn't make very much sense. Maharikra, that's found in the Pros Gedolos on Eicha, Maharikra reads this pasuk as if Me'oni Me'rov Avodah is written in the wrong place in the pasuk. He understands the pasuk as Golsa Yehuda, Hi Yashva Bagoyin Lamasama Noach Me'oni Me'rov Avodah. The reason why Klal Yisrael never found rest is because of the poverty, and we were working so hard. That's why we never found rest while we're in Galus. And Me'oni Me'rov Avodah is not the cause of the Galus. On the Midrashim, though, one understands the Pesukim as it's the cause of the Galus. The Midrashim say Galsa Yehuda Me'oni is because we didn't eat matzah on Pesach, and matzah is lechem oni. No. Me'oni, because we didn't do oni, that's why we went into Galus. But the point is, the Pesuk stresses that lo matzah manoach, that we didn't find a place. Now, in some ways, that's pretty bad, no? We go to Galus, and we never find the resting place. We never find a place where we're comfortable. We're always moving around country to country, and we never fully settle anywhere. And that's very bad. But in some ways, I think that's also a big bracha. Let me explain. Velo matza hayona manoach akaf ragwa. The same words. Velo matza manoach is found in Parashas Noach, that the yona, the dove that Noach sent out, didn't find rest. Batosha velov elateva. And therefore the dove returned to Noach, no? And the pasuk says that when the dove found a resting place, the dove didn't come back. Many of the Darshanim explain, and the Midrashim have that in Parshas Noach, that our Galus existence is such that when it's lo matzah manoach, when we're uncomfortable where we are, so we're constantly striving to return to Eretz Yisrael, no? But when we're very comfortable, when the Yona, and Klal Yisrael is compared to Yona, no? The Gemara in Shabbos Daf Mem Tes speaks about Elisha Bal Knafayim, that he had the wings of a dove in his hand that represented Klal Yisrael and the tefillin, etc. When Klal Yisrael is comfortable where they are, so then we don't have the same need to return to Eretz Yisrael. But when Klal Yisrael is uncomfortable, so then returning to Eretz Yisrael is much easier. We see this in our own lives, no? The country where the Jewish people outside of Eretz Yisrael are the most secure is probably the United States of America. And we're also the least likely to make Aliyah. With all of the work that Nefesh B'Nefesh is doing, and it's great, it's wonderful, but we're still the least likely to make Aliyah. Jews in France are making Aliyah en masse. Jews in France are going because they're not comfortable. Because lo matzah manoach. So lo matzah manoach, not finding a resting place, in some ways is a very good thing, because the yearning to return to Eretz Yisrael is there. I brought a sefer tonight, May Afar Kumi. How is this past Shabbos? I was away. Wherever I was, I gave a shiur about the mitzvah of Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So, mitzvah Yishuv Eretz Yisrael appears in this past week's parish, a very beautiful mitzvah. The Torah says, V'arachtem v'sarach v'shaftem bo, that you should take over the land, you should live in Eretz Yisrael. The Ramban comments that it's a mitzvah sasein in the Torah to try to live in Eretz Yisrael. Very beautiful mitzvah. This sefer Me'afar Kumi was written by a fellow. He was a 17-year-old American from New Jersey, I believe. His name was Zvi Glatt. He, in 1977, he made Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael at age 17 against his parents' wishes. His parents said, "You shouldn't go." He said, "I'm going," and he went. And he was totally high on Israel. He drank all the Kool-Aid. And he learned first in the new yeshiva that they started then, called Arat Zion, and he studied America's Harav. And then in one of his army stints, and he was in Hebron in the Shabbos in 1980, and he was killed. And after he was nifter, so his friends went through his firm, and they noticed that he wrote this little pamphlet called Me'ofar Kumi, trying to encourage all of his friends back in America to join him in Eretz Yisrael, and making halachic arguments and hashgachic arguments about, basically, he says, any argument that you're going to have why you shouldn't move to Eretz Yisrael, I'm going to refute. That's the idea of this book. It's a very nice book. The funniest part about the book, in some ways, is he has a whole section arguing against Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe feels that the mitzvah Yishuv Haaretz is a mitzvah kiyumis, not a mitzvah chiyumis. It's not an obligation, but someday, if you do it, you get points. So, that's the reason why many people don't move to Eretz Yisrael, based on this idea that Rav Moshe said, Rav Soloveitchik said the same idea. That's why many people don't move to Eretz Yisrael. So his whole book, or he has a whole chapter in his book, where he argues against Rav Moshe. So Rav Moshe writes a haskama to the book that goes something like this. I read the Sefer. He has a whole section arguing against me. I think he's wrong. I think I'm still right. But you should read his Sefer anyway. Now that speaks a lot about Rav Moshe and who Rav Moshe was. But this book, Me'ofar Kumi, basically the whole introduction, he quotes Mamari Chazal saying this idea that the beginning of Eicha is representing. The Eicha idea of Paisa Ke'almana, that it's a temporary thing, that's only because Lo Motza Manoach. And he quotes the drushes of the Or Sameach, where the Or Sameach spoke about how when people feel that Berlin begins to have the sense of like Yerushalayim for them, they don't want to move to Yerushalayim, that's when bad things are called in Berlin. The RSMA, the Sam Sofer, and some of his drushes spoke about how there are two ways to do a mitzvah. You do a mitzvah and you're forced to do a mitzvah. You do a mitzvah because you love the mitzvah. He said those people who don't want to make aliyah, don't want to move to Eretz Yisrael because they feel that life in Chutz Laaretz is good, they should realize that you should try to do mitzvahs because you love the mitzvahs, and that's why you should make aliyah when you still have an opportunity. It's really a very beautiful Sefer that he has, and it's based in part on midrashim that are here right at the beginning of Eicha that that we were trying to discuss. Okay, I probably have more to say, but I think we'll break now. I thank you for listening. If any questions, we could do that also. Tell jokes, whatever. Yeah, Rena.
Thank you for this year. Totally practical question. You mentioned tangentially about not having a student. What's it called? The student of Osaka.
Okay. Oh, this year, yeah.
Right, that we don't have one. Are there any other details of Halachos?
Yes, I'm going to give a sure Thursday night in the show about when Tisha B'Av falls out on Shabbos and some of the differences. We could talk about that. There is very minor differences. And, yeah, that's why we'll have to extend it to make a whole shiur out of it. Okay. Anything else?
Thank you
all very much for coming.